También en Irak no se derrote el terrorismo, el flujo de refugiados no hará más que aumentar. Y nuestros socios europeos tienen que comprenderlo. No hace falta buscar enemigos ficticios de Europa donde no los hay, sino que se debe entender la esencia de la crisis y tener una actitud seria en cuanto a las causas iniciales.
La portavoz de la Cancillería rusa también ha comentado las voces que acusan a Rusia por supuestamente haber estancado las negociaciones en Ginebra sobre la paz en Siria. Ha dicho que esta es una mentira pura y que, bueno, todo esto se hace para engañar al público internacional.
Elena, ¿y cuáles han sido las declaraciones de la oposición siria?
Bueno, hay que decir que un representante de la oposición siria, del grupo Moscú El Cairo, en una rueda de prensa organizada en Moscú, ha hablado de las posibilidades y también de las condiciones para que sigan adelante las negociaciones en Ginebra sobre la paz en Siria. En primer lugar, él como lo más importante ve el cese al fuego en Siria y también una cosa necesaria es que dejen entrar a los convoyes con la ayuda humanitaria a las ciudades sirias asediadas. Bueno, él también ha hablado sobre su delegación, sobre la oposición moderada siria que está dispuesta a participar en las negociaciones como parte de una delegación única que hablaría con Damasco. Y también una cosa que tenemos que recordar es que en el principio los kurdos no estaban invitados a estas negociaciones y ahora Jamil dice que hay muchísimas posibilidades de que kurdos sí que participen en estas negociaciones. También hay que decir que Jamil comentó la declaración de Ban Ki-moon, el secretario general de la ONU, que también ha acusado a Rusia de haber estancado de alguna manera las negociaciones en Ginebra. Bueno, Jamil piensa que estas declaraciones no tienen ninguna base y que son muy irresponsables. Ahora recordemos que las negociaciones en Ginebra, lo que se llama Ginebra 3, empezaron el 29 de enero. Luego el 3 de febrero el representante de la ONU para Siria, Stefan de Mistura, anunció una pausa y ahora se espera que esas negociaciones sigan adelante el 25 de febrero.
Muy buenas noches, estimados radio oyentes. Habla Fernando Velázquez, director del proyecto informativo Pacífica. Lamentamos interrumpir el programa a estas alturas del juego, pero es que se trata de algo importante que no podemos omitir o no podemos ignorar. Estamos hablando de las finanzas de esta emisora, sin comerciales, sin interrupciones comerciales. ¿De dónde piensas tú que vamos a sacar dinero para pagar la luz, el teléfono y los demás gastos necesarios para mantener esta emisora en el aire? Bueno, la respuesta es muy sencilla. La audiencia, desde 1959, ha estado financiando, con sus donaciones, financiando los gastos básicos de esta emisora y, por tanto, eso nos permite la libertad de darnos el lujo de no tener pelos en la lengua y decir las cosas como son, decirlo sin tapujos, porque confiamos en que nuestra radio audiencia agradece la honestidad en el enfoque de la noticia, en el periodismo que se hace por acá, los datos que se proporcionan, en el peor de los casos, pudiera decirse, complementan el resto de la propaganda, las distorsiones, las medias verdades y medias mentiras que se escuchan en los medios corporativos, en el lado bueno de las cosas, pues es una bocanada de aire fresco para comparar datos, para elaborar un juicio más completo sobre la realidad que tenemos enfrente. Pues 818-985-5735 es el número de llamar para que nos ayudes a mantener este programa en el aire, esta emisora como un medio independiente en esta parte del mundo, en el sur de California, en los Estados Unidos. 818-985-5735. Nuestra meta, $600,000 para fin de mes, se está haciendo más y más pequeña. En lugar de 600 $600,000 que buscamos acumular a principios de esta recaudación. Ahorita ya hemos, hasta este momento, hemos logrado acumular 140,876. Ha sido un día bastante, bastante grato, bastante agradable para nosotros, pues nuestra audiencia ha respondido con mucho amor, con mucho cariño a nuestros esfuerzos acá en la emisora. 818-985-5735. Tenemos gente en el estudio A, pegada a los teléfonos, esperando que nos llames, esperando que tú marques el 818-985-5735. Cabe recordar dos cosas importantes en este momento. Uno, de que el resto del programa informativo Pacífica de hoy, que no escucharon ustedes, la forma en que el escritor investigador John Rappaport desmonta la hipótesis del virus del Zika y la llamada epidemia mundial que este representa, y un reporte de Argentina, otro de Guatemala y otro de España. Eso es el reporte completo, es decir, el programa completo lo puedes escuchar en el sitio web, en los archivos de audio de KPFK, www.kpfk.org. La otra cosa que hay que recordar es de que ya estamos acercándonos más a la meta y que el día de hoy la audiencia se ha portado muy generosa y esperamos continuar con esa euforia, con ese gusto que nos provoca sabiendo de que hay una audiencia que se responsabiliza, que se quiere asegurar de que la Radio Pacífica se va a mantener en el aire. 818-985-5735, 818-985-5735 es el número de llamar. Estamos tratando de eliminar las recaudaciones de fondos. Nos estamos acercando, ya mucha gente se está incorporando a nuestro nuevo plan de trabajo. Es decir, una economía sustentable, una economía de que los y las ciudadanas que nos escuchan, que se aseguren de poner una cantidad X, una cantidad no determinada por nosotros, sino por ustedes, una vez al mes, para que entre todos, en lugar de que sean decenas de miles de personas haciendo el esfuerzo de pagar los gastos de básicos de KPFK, que sean cientos de miles. ¿Cómo lo podemos hacer? Bueno, uno sería de que la persona que nos escucha ahorita, en este momento, tú que nos escuchas, nos ayudes a promover la radio en tu vecindario, en tu trabajo, en tu escuela, entre tus conocidos, y que todos juntos hagamos la labor de promoción, de publicidad, para que más y más personas se den cuenta, descubran, se percaten del tipo de programación que sale en la radio KPFK todos los días y de que se incorporen a escuchar y luego que puedan valorar el trabajo único que hacemos nosotros acá, de que se incorporen también a ese esfuerzo de economía sustentable, de que hagan una donación. Si $5 al mes es demasiado dinero, entonces de que 2, 3, 4 o 5 personas se comprometan de que cada fin de mes cada quien va a poner $1 y mandan sus $5 a KPFK. Ahora, si la cantidad es de 10, igual, de igual manera, 2, 3 o 10 personas se juntan, ya sea entre amigos, entre vecinos, y pongan $10 una vez al mes, entre todos, para darle un pago de $10 a la KPFK. Así pues, podemos de una manera exitosa y con una participación mucho más amplia de las personas que viven en el sur de California y, por qué no, personas que nos están escuchando en este momento a través de www.kpfk.org, que nos escuchen a través de la red de la internet, que también pueden incorporarse a este esfuerzo. Así pues, en lugar de tener interrupciones en la programación, que la programación fluya de una manera constante, sin ese tipo de interrupciones. Y para eso se necesita, pues, ampliar el número de radioyentes a través de asambleas populares que vamos a estar ampliando por todo el sur de California, foros comunitarios, debates, presentaciones educativas, foros informativos sobre diferentes temas importantes para la comunidad. Y así, de que en la medida que vayamos haciendo realizando estos eventos en todo el sur de California, de que más y más gente se vaya incorporando, eso aunado a la las personas que se estarán incorporando a través de la invitación tuya, tus compañeros de clase, tus compañeros de trabajo, tus vecinos, tus familiares. 818-985-5735 es el número de Mar. Ayúdanos, pues, estemos claros de que el número de corporaciones que controlan los medios de comunicación en su totalidad es menos de una docena. Ellos controlan radio, televisión, cine, editoriales que publican libros, revistas, todo lo que atañe a la comunicación lo controlan un puñado de corporaciones. Entonces, el mensaje se hace más homogéneo, por eso uno se percata de la propaganda que promueve el militarismo, las intervenciones militares, ya sean en Libia, en Siria, o en Yemen, en Somalia, o en cualquier parte del mundo, es una voz homogénea que se trasluce y que se transmite a lo largo y a lo ancho de todos los medios de comunicación, porque esos grandes intereses corporativos están asociados al complejo industrial militar, y por tanto, ellos están creando las condiciones, la opinión favorable para apoyar la matriz de opinión necesaria para apoyar las guerras, las intervenciones militares, el gasto militar con dinero y con sus hijos y sus hijas enviarlos a soldados a través de los medios de comunicación. Se está creando esa opinión, esa matriz de opinión. Nosotros tenemos obviamente un esfuerzo titánico, un gran reto, pero estamos dispuestos a aceptar ese reto con la ayuda tuya. 818-985-5735. Tenemos que salirnos del aire porque los compañeros de Contragolpe ya están acá tocando la puerta, listos para entrar. Agradecemos a las personas que llamaron con su donación. A nombre de, antes de irnos, queremos agradecer a Alejandro Hernández por su participación en los controles. A nombre de Torsti y de Norma Martínez, se despide Fernando Velázquez. Que pase muy buena noche. Se quedan pues con los compañeros de Contragolpe. Hasta luego.
Salió el hombre en busca de libertad.
Con sus hermanos de clase, el mundo quiso cambiar.
Alzando contra el imperio a los pobres del lugar.
Libraba su guerra de hambre tras muerte y rebelión.
Luchando contra un sistema que quisieron derrumbar, muchos obreros cayeron defendiendo su verdad.
Con los pobres y oprimidos, con los sin voz ni futuro, buscaba para los suyos la vida con dignidad.
En los tiempos de cambiar, los sueños tienen. Vamos, vamos, vamos buscando, buscando el mundo ideal.
You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, freakradio.org. Fight the system.
Just off the street interviews and more conflict at Sushi Now and Alibaba's Cafe, the yuppified planter area, plus a report from Santa Cruz City Council on the serving of the city council with a federal lawsuit. Stay tuned.
Down, down, downtown, when you're brown on a Friday night. Well, downtown plays Russian roulette with you, that's right. I said downtown when you're brown on a Friday night plays Russian roulette with you. But not with a second-hand Saturday night special, nah. Downtown plays Russian roulette with a brand new SJPD revolver. One bullet for injustice, one bullet for intolerance, and one bullet for the self-hating sellout Latino Campulero that will never bust enough Mexicans, harass enough Chicanos to beat the shit out of enough Cholos to feel equal to his Caucasian counterparts. You see, downtown when you're brown, Officer Lopez is hunting down Chicanos like the Terminator, hoping in vain that one day he may be able to wake up and scrub the brown out of downtown, or at the very least, out of his own skin. Downtown! Is drowned out by the boom, boom, boom of tricked out impalas and carried out many crooks as the catcalls of the present are heard up and down Santa Clara Street, and beautiful Latinos tread by on 16 in midnight blue Buick Rivieras with gold smokes and silver crucifixes hanging from the rear mirror. The town when you're brown on a Friday night, all the signs say no cruising zone, but what they really mean is no fucking Mexican zone. Because SJBD will pull you over for being down, down, and round, and for no other reason. And you will find yourself on the corner of 27th in Santa Clara at a McDonald's parking lot, surrounded by four police cruisers, while two bigs in SWAT gear search your car illegally, and a third one frisks you. And now I'm not talking about no pussy little frisk like you see in front of a club. I'm talking about a real motherfucking frisk like they do on cops when they tell you to spread your name, put your hands on the hood of the car, and they pass you down so good you think you're getting a hand job. And you know, if they don't find nothing on you, if they don't find nothing on you, oh shit, look out now, down there somewhere, someone's getting arrested for being brown and downtown. Someone's getting beat to a pulp by Billy Clubs in a back alley for being brown and downtown. Someone's getting shot for being brown and downtown. And everywhere, 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 that's what's going down for being brown and downtown.
But we don't have that problem in Santa Cruz because there ain't too many brown people at all, and so there ain't too many brown people downtown. Actually, most of them tend to stay away from the downtown, and particularly the black people. But, hey, they're welcome on free radio, and we're all welcome on free radio, and we don't care what your skin color is or your point of view. Well, I care what your point of view is, but, you know, I'll give you a chance to speak. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and you're tuned to Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. I'm Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norse. I do 2 hours of talk, tape, call-in, and some music around issues of free speech and homeless civil rights here in Santa Cruz, concerned with the rights of folks outside who are poor. You can be a renter and you can be poor. Folks who are likely to run into conflicts with police simply for trying to exist. Today is March 28, 2002, Thursday evening. And actually, before I came to the studio tonight, I stopped at the what I call Yuppie Planter. I'm going to be playing a considerable amount of tape about that later in the show. And I'm going to be playing it unedited. I promised partisans on the other side of the issue of whether it's okay to fence off public sidewalk in order to get rid of a class of people, which is what Matisse Selman and Ali Ka have, in essence, colluded with the city to do by setting up this green fenced-off area at Yuppie Planter. It used to be Hippie Planter or Community Planter. Now, of course, it's Yuppie Planter because you can't be in that area unless you're one of their favorites or one of their customers. And I guess they could deny you even access to the area as a customer by saying they don't want to serve you. So, you know, it's become a sort of a private club in that area if you want to be a part of that scene. And that's, of course, something that really upsets me. I don't like it, and I continually draw the attention of the community to it by shouting, boycott Sushi Now and boycott Alibaba's Cafe. Sushi Now is actually the name of the cafe run by Matisse Selman, which I used to patronize quite regularly.
and hope to again, if only these cafe owners would be willing to sit down and talk about the real issues instead of going behind the backs of the community to the city council and the redevelopment agency and talking essentially to a bigoted mentality of people and proceeding to wall off a whole bunch of people from that area. And we've talked about this at length a couple months ago. It's kind of a done deal. Why bring it up? Well, because it came up today, and so I guess it'll be coming up again later in the show. I did promise, however, in some emails to folks in more diverse parts of the country, I should say in different parts of the country, up in Portland, Oregon, and elsewhere, who are planning to come to the Homeless Activist Summit. That's a summit that's going to be held in Santa Cruz May 3rd and 4th at Thomas Levitt's house. We're going to be concerned with Jump starting a campaign to decriminalize homelessness in Santa Cruz, to end the sleeping ban, and also to unite different homeless-run self-help encampments, such as Camp Paradise here in Santa Cruz, the Isla Vista's Home Sweet Home, Camp Home Sweet Home, Dignity Village in Portland, Oregon, and up in Seattle, the Tent City 3, as it's called, the SHARE project that has been running that for some years. All these encampments started illegally, and they started not with the permission of the cities involved, but in spite of the objections of the cities involved. And to me, that is, there's a real lesson to be learned there. You don't wait for permission. You apologize later if necessary, but you proceed to do what you need to do to survive. Anyway, this part of the show, I'm going to try to start doing this more regularly. I'm going to talk about issues that are of more, shall we say, broader interest beyond the Santa Cruz area for the next 20 minutes to half hour, try to get those issues out, and then return to Santa Cruz, because I am primarily concerned with local issues in Santa Cruz. I think that, you know, there's lots of national media attention on issues of war and peace, not enough actually, but the issues that you can see in the main media and that you see even covered by mainline protest organizations often does not concern what's happening in Santa Cruz. And that to me is one of the strengths of free radio, because we actually have broadcasters who cover Santa Cruz, and I really commend them for it, and I'm going to do that myself. I have, first of all, a story. This is actually about a month old, February 27th, from the Press Democrat up in Santa Rosa, but it's interesting. It says, it talks about illegal camping. Terry Delacour got her first ticket for illegal camping more than 15 months ago, part of the Santa Rosa Police Department's efforts to clean up the homeless encampment near Santa Rosa Creek next to St. Eugene's Cathedral. And we hope to invite the remainder of that encampment to come to the Santa Cruz Summit on May 3rd and 4th. By the way, everyone is invited to this summit, but the primary purpose of it is to organize activists to end the sleeping ban and to decriminalize homelessness in Santa Cruz, as well as to support the encampment. So be advised, that's, to my mind, what the focus is. But we're going to be having a whole day of forums and workshops and such on Saturday, May 4th, and on the May 3rd, there'll be music and dancing and wild debauchery and who knows what else, if I have my say. Anyway, continuing this article, and we hope to get the Santa Rosa folks involved. Terry Delacour got her first illegal camping ticket more than 15 months ago as part of the SRPD's efforts to clean up the homeless encampment near Santa Rosa Creek next to St. Eugene's Cathedral. She got two more last summer and also was cited for an expired registration on her truck. Then came another ticket for illegal camping, this time for sleeping in her truck on a downtown street. It's one thing if you're living in a tent, but it's kind of hard to hide with a truck, she says, trying to explain the repeated violations. Delacour, a 45-year-old Santa Rosa resident who has been homeless for about 2 years, has no money to pay the fines, which run $136 per ticket. Here in Santa Cruz, it's $54 per ticket, unless you're on the university campus, in which case it's $162 per ticket. Plus, of course, the fines that Mulligan likes to add if you don't happen to appear in court at the proper time. So they've stacked up for the Santa Rosa person, accumulated interest and penalties over the months. Today she owes a total of $1,135 and her driver's license has been suspended. It kind of multiplies, you know, she says. It's a familiar story in the homeless community. You get a ticket for sleeping in the wrong place or letting the tags expire in your car and you don't pay it. The months go by and a big fine turns into an impossible one. Your name goes into a computer and the next time a cop stops you, you've got warrants and you're hauled off to jail for illegal camping. Recognizing the problem, sympathetic representatives of city government and the county criminal justice system are exploring the creation of a homeless court. Gag me with the spoon. It would convene periodically in Santa Rosa's new homeless shelter, due to open on a limited basis around April 1st, modeled after a successful program in San Diego, now the only homeless court in the country. The Santa Rosa version would help homeless people dispose of minor legal issues as a step towards putting past troubles behind them and getting back on their feet. It would be a good, real good thing, Delacour says. I'm afraid to go to regular court. All I've got is my truck and my dog. If I went to court and they took me to jail right there, then everything is gone. Of course, the problem with all this, I'm interrupting the story to mention this, is that you don't need homeless courts. You need an end to anti-homeless laws. That's what you need. And then you wouldn't need to have courts at all around this, special courts around this issue. San Diego's homeless court grew out of a stand-down gathering for homeless veterans in 1988. Of the 500 vets who attended, 116 listed their greatest obstacle as the need to resolve outstanding warrants. The next year, the county's superior court held a special session at stand-down. Over the next 4 years, more than 940 homeless vets had cases resolved. In 1993, the program was expanded, and homeless court now holds monthly sessions at San Diego shelters. Rather than impose fines on people with little or no money, the sentences handed out in homeless court usually involve taking advantage of services such as job training or programs such as alcohol or drug treatment. Others are sentenced to community service. I think a perfect example here would be to have people cleaning up their illegal campsites, said Judge Rene Chateau, who will meet with the county's other judges next week to talk about the program. Where are they going to sleep while they're doing this cleaning up? Here in Santa Cruz, they've finally got something where for 2 weeks, if you're cleaning up areas in a conservation corps type way, if you have $1 million worth of insurance, the okay of Jim Lang, the Parks and Rec czar, and meet six other conditions, then if you're part of an organized group under a nonprofit, that is to say if you're Camp Paradise or associated with them, then you can possibly, maybe, stay in a park for 2 weeks with this group while doing the conservation work. So, of course, the big gap here is that there's no place for people to go tonight, tomorrow night, the next night, where there is no shelter, the rents are skyrocketing, and there are $54 fines in a town which has legal shelter tonight for less than 165 of the 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people in Santa Cruz. This is all PR for some sort of program that they're spending money on instead of building campgrounds where people could actually sleep. They don't want to do that, you see. And they don't want to do that in Santa Cruz. It's not going to be done until we, the people, do it ourselves and support it so strongly that the government has no alternative but, as has happened in Portland, Oregon, to accept it. Rather than impose fines, we've talked about that, public defender Lou Hafner, whose office represents most of the homeless people who wind up in court, says he believes a homeless court would benefit Sonoma County. That's the county right above Marin County, a couple counties above the bay there. It costs the county a lot of money for failures to appear and the subsequent warrants and court appearances, he said. Chateau, the former city attorney for Santa Rosa, says he'd be interested in presiding over the court. I'm seeing these people now on a daily basis at the courthouse, he says, or not seeing them. I'm issuing warrants on a daily basis. This would be an opportunity to take care of their problems in a place where they're more comfortable. Of course, as I said, this is a bunch of crap. What they need to do is change the law, and they're not going to change it until we make them change it. That's the problem, and we are the solution, as usual. If you want to call in and give your thoughts, my number here at Free Radio is 427-3772, 427-FRSC, for Free Radio Santa Cruz. If you're out of the area and you want to call in, you just add the area code, 831-427-3772, 831-427-3772. And here's a story from Sacramento. Capital targets homeless camps, Sacramento Bee. This is from Monday, March 18th, 2002. As it passes through North Sacramento, the American River Parkway becomes a riparian jungle where dirt paths hug the river and wind through a thick cover of oak trees, wild grapevines, and elderberry thickets. It's a potential paradise for hikers, horseback riders, and picnicking families. But the absence of such people is striking. A closer look inside the thickets finds many of them full of trash, old clothes, bicycle parts, sleeping bags, and human excrement. Over the past two decades, this portion of a taxpayer-owned parkway has been claimed by another population, the homeless. Rarely do I see a non-homeless citizen out here, which is a kind of sad state of affairs, Park Ranger Tim McElhaney said last week as he supervised a sheriff's work detail cleaning up garbage in the lower parkway. McElhaney keeps a map dotted with all the camps he has identified along the river in the past few years. In some areas, the river is lined with a nearly solid mass of dots. Last summer, he said there were 80 campsites in just 1 4-acre area. Sacramento County, which owns the parkway, has struggled for years with the politically explosive issue of homeless campers. Officials don't want to appear insensitive. A brief interjection. We're talking about violating human rights here. It's not a question of insensitivity. Although, actually, all these people are really concerned about is covering their asses and looking good. We know that from what the city council does on homeless issues here in Santa Cruz. And they will continue to until we make them change. And indeed, showing up their insensitivity, or if you will, their human rights violations, or hauling their asses into federal court is one way to deal with this issue that they really can't ignore. At the same time, the story continues, the Sacramento politicians are barraged with complaints about illegal dumping and camping along the parkway, often touted as Sacramento's most valuable recreational resource. The pendulum sort of swings back and forth in terms of what kinds of actions we're supposed to be taking against this homeless population, said Dave Liddick, a county parks department manager. At the moment, the pendulum has swung toward enforcement of the ban on parkway camping. In the past few weeks, the county permanently assigned two veteran rangers, McElhaney and Will Safford, to patrol the stretch of the parkway east of Discovery Park and west of Cal Expo, which is the greatest concentration of homeless camps. County Supervisor Roger Dickinson has directed county park staff to come up with ideas for attracting more recreational users to this end of the parkway, some drinking fountains, for instance, or picnic tables. We clearly have a circumstance in the lower parkway where people don't necessarily feel safe or welcome, Dickinson said. Homeless campers and some of their advocates say the county should just leave them alone, especially given Sacramento's acute shortage of homeless shelter beds. Sacramento County spends $22 million a year on services for the homeless, but the Sacramento County and City's Board on Homelessness has concluded the region needs to build shelter for 1,600 more people over the next 5 years. Again, this is kind of misleading because it's for the last 10 years that people have been forced to be outside in these camps themselves. It's not like it's a question of choice. We have a phone call. We're going to interrupt this story from the Sacramento Bee to talk to you, the people.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert.
Hey there, Ed.
You muckraker, you.
Yes, sir.
And I'm proud of you for it.
Well, thanks, Ed.
Teddy Roosevelt didn't like that name. That meant troublemaker. In reality, all it meant was a truth teller.
Yeah, well, you know, muckrakers was the derogatory term used around the turn of the century for people who exposed abusive conditions, you know, in the working class situation among the, you know, the meat industry. Upton Sinclair's book, The Jungle, was a big expose of that.
Packing town.
Yeah, back in Chicago. Anything happening out there? You're a man who lives in your vehicle, but
just surviving.
Uh-huh.
Had a good, bean taco dinner. Decent, man. Dog likes some. You know, he gets some.
Well, what's happening? You think the situation is more mellow than a year ago? Is it any worse? Is it any better? Any sense on it?
I'm always real leery to say, Robert. You know, I haven't had any problems I can't say, right?
Uh-huh.
But I always know, you know, smart enough to know that it can come happen anytime.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
So you don't really feel secure that...
Heck no.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, some have called, for example, the National Law Center for Homelessness and Poverty called Santa Cruz one of the three meanest cities in California, and I guess one of the seven meanest cities in the nation. And what's your feeling about that? Is Santa Cruz a mean city, or is it getting a bad rap?
Well, the censor that I am, I know for a fact it could be much meaner. Although I keep to myself and don't get to, you know what I mean, I try to keep, you know, be a good person, not do anything wrong, and just, you know, mm-hmm. know what I mean?
I would imagine you're telling the truth, but we may have to check on you tonight to see if you're...
Investigate.
Now, wait a minute. If you're sleeping at night, you're doing something wrong. If you're sleeping, you're doing something wrong.
But verify.
Are you staying awake all night?
No.
Well, then you're a criminal. I don't even want to talk to you any further.
Well... I had a few little snide remarks to make. Did you happen to see the Metro today?
You know, I did, and I'm going to be talking about that. This segment of the show, I'm kind of working on stuff that's happening in other cities, because I'm hoping that other people from, like, Portland and maybe Santa Barbara are tuning in to this show and kind of checking it out, so we're kind of giving them a broader perspective. But what happened?
Well, I'd be the first a-hole to break the news. Yeah. You're listed in the Metro as under the Goldies as the local villain, but you're only number two.
I know. I didn't make the top of the list.
Yeah, see?
Yeah, Larry Temple.
You know what I have to say, though? I have one very snide remark to say.
Mm-hmm.
Those people who think like that, I mean, they don't have the right to suck your big toe.
Mm-hmm.
And not even a dirty toe.
Mm.
Well, dirty toe, maybe.
Well, that's I don't know what to say. the foot fetishes in
I'm
here.
I'm just being the vile.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting that every year the Metro comes out with these kind of Golden Globe-ish type awards, and usually they call it the most irritating personality. And I for a couple of years, I won the most irritating personality, and then Bruce Bratton, their hack in-house columnist, won that award. Because,
no.
Well, I understand.
He wrote a good article there about the little paragraph about the upcoming homeless.
You know, that's a good point. I actually was going to read that article on the air, and I should read that. Perhaps I will as I hang up. Yeah, let me talk more about that. Anything more you want to say?
That's all I had to say about the big toe. You know, it's an ugly picture.
You can bring me some ugly.
You know what I mean? I'm an ugly kind of guy.
Well, you're not that ugly, but if you want to bring me some folks who want to suck my toes, and we'll talk about it.
Happy and sad.
All right.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And phone lines are open, 427-3772. Yeah, I'll get back to that Metro article, or perhaps I should now that it's been mentioned, leaving the Sacramento article that I was reading. The Metro article, the Metro is now doing this special Goldies that they do every year. And as I said, the second worst villain, or second best villain, is me, I guess. Greenwood, the UC Chancellor, gets number one slot, and Wormhout gets number three slot. And then as far as local heroes, Larry Templeton actually comes in as number three local hero. So, Larry and I are just going to have to duke it out, man, the villain and the hero. We'll have to talk about that later. I'll call him up. Maybe we can arrange a charity mud fight or something, or a bicycle race. Actually, I think he'd win that one hands down. Or maybe not. I don't know. Also, Bruce Bratton, who normally the word homeless never appears in his column, in spite of however many protests there are or how much abuse there is against homeless people in Santa Cruz. Old Bruce, who was originally the biggest fan of Fitzmaurice, Cronin, Sugar that you ever heard of, had nothing bad to say about them. Then when they killed the Plaza, he got a little cranky. He apparently picked up one of our... I think we sent him an email about the Homeless Summit, and I'll read you what he says about the Homeless Summit. It's in, as I said, the Metro Santa Cruz. There's a statewide summit to be held in Sacramento on April 22nd. That's not the Homeless Summit that's going to be in Santa Cruz. It's an earlier one, and one that's actually for the politicians. And Governor Davis wants to make homelessness a major issue and is creating a new program to create permanent housing, where have we heard this before, for thousands of homeless by 2010, according to last Friday's Chronicle. Davis' study estimates there's 1.1 million homeless in California. I suspect that's a vast undercount. What's interesting is that there's going to be a homeless summit here in Santa Cruz, Bruce Bratton continues, May 3rd and 4th. Isla Vista's Camp Home Sweet Homeless, Portland's Dignity Village, Seattle's Tent City, and other homeless groups, including our own Camp Paradise, are all sending representatives. Let's hope that some of these representatives, plus folks from our city and county government, first go to the Sacramento Summit and then come back and listen and report to everyone at the Santa Cruz Summit. Much good can come from these meetings, and the homeless problem isn't going away. Let us reason together. Why not? Well, that sounds very nice, except Bruce, if he had his eyes on the ball, should know that we had our own Homeless Issues Task Force a year and a half ago, which issued their 30-odd recommendations that were promptly ignored by the City Council and are gathering dust on the shelves of the City Clerk's office. And we had our task force to examine the camping ordinance, the City Council subcommittee, that spent 3 months and several hundred hours examining the camping ordinance, but denying any real examination of reforming the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance, which are really the key here. The key is to, first of all, acknowledge the human right to sleep, and then, of course, to set up reasonable places where people can sleep, campgrounds where people can go. And we hear a lot of talk about it's a national problem, and why don't you go to Capitola and complain? And, you know, gosh, if we opened a campground, everyone in the world would come. These are the Rotkin arguments that you're going to be hearing more and more as Rotkin comes back for term number 48. Actually, I think it's term number 5 or 6. He's a council member, former council member, who is mayor, and he's currently an instructor up at UCSC, or lecturer. Coming back again, kind of Fitzmaurice, but worse, because he's smarter. Anyway, so that's what's happening in the Metro, and the Metro also has some rather puerile awards for different things, you know, kind of superficial awards, and a couple of shots at homeless people. We got a caller.
Hi there, caller. You're on the air.
Oh, my God. Hi, Robert. It's Chris.
Hey, Chris.
Well, I don't know what your topic is.
Well, we have been talking about, in this kind of hour, half hour, we're kind of talking about statewide topics, but a caller wanted to mention the Metro's awards. I don't know if you've read the Metro, but they gave me the second best villain and Larry Templeton the third best hero, and Bruce Bratton gave a plug to the upcoming homeless summit and also mentioned there's a Sacramento hack politician homelessness summit coming up on April 22nd. But,
okay.
you're on time here because you I know are an attorney who's been covering the Camp Paradise appeal.
Yes, there were... the tapes are ready and we're ready to go.
Oh, wow, amazing. I know you...
I thought I had dialed the number that was the off-air number.
Oh, you silly
but
thing. Now you're in trouble. Well, I think I'm glad... I should tell the public that you were, you have been trying for weeks and weeks to get these tapes, which are essentially the audio tapes of the trial, which
yes.
was held in November of 4 defendants, who are, three of whom are appealing. I guess that's Larry Templeton. Who are the other two?
Kay Phillips and Randy C. Winchell.
And, of course, the third one, Squirrel, is filing charges against Larry Templeton, but that's another story.
Squirrel's not appealing. Doesn't
right.
want anything to do with the camp anymore.
Right, right. And there's, of course, a big controversy being blasted about in the Sentinel on that issue. But the important issue for me is this important necessity defense that was undertaken
yes.
at the trial. You want to tell us about that, what that was about?
Well, the Necessity 101 is simply that the case was tried under the theory that the campers were, yes, they were doing something guilty, but were basically not guilty of it because they had to do it had to do it because of a necessity, that there was nowhere to go and nowhere to sleep, no shelter, and that therefore we were not guilty of the crime of
camping.
Thank you.
Yeah, these charges were, you know, these tickets were issued April 3rd by our very own homeless resources officer, Eric Stoneheart Seeley,
yes.
as some have called. Actually, it's Smirking Seeley. The guy has got
smirking
a grin on his
Seeley.
Face you cannot get rid of. But, you can't blame him for. That's just what he, you know, his natural approach. But what I can blame him and the authorities for is hassling people who have no legal place to go. In fact, that very evening, I think there was testimony from the Homeless Services Center that not only did they send people over to this camp because they had no place, but they had letters written which explicitly were saying, we haven't had any shelter all summer, we aren't going to have any shelter, dismiss all tickets around this issue because there's no legal place for people to sleep.
They've had those letters for years. Karen Brock drafted that letter. She's been using it for years.
Right, and so, but it was particularly true on April 3rd, and I mean on August 3rd, and that's why I'm baffled with the decision of Commissioner Irwin Joseph, which was that somehow he suggested there were alternatives
yes.
that the Camp Paradise people, and you were one of them at that time,
mm-hmm.
had, you know, in that situation. What alternatives did you have? What, floating down the river, breaking
bridges,
into buildings,
yes, bridges,
you know, sleeping illegally somewhere else in the city in a less safe
mm-hmm.
situation? What were your alternatives?
Breaking into cars, I suppose, sleeping under bridges,
well,
sleeping
course.
On park benches.
Right, or sleeping anywhere on public property in Santa Cruz, which is illegal after 11 o'clock at night,
right.
and is less safe than sleeping in tents in a protected community off down by the river, of course, which enraged those who are concerned with the riparian corridor and the environmental circumstances there. And, you know, I'm not entirely without sympathy for that, but the fact that they weren't interested in finding alternatives for folks. It made me believe, you know, it's sort of like, you know, polo ponies, as Becky Johnson put it in one of her stories for Street Spirit. Polo ponies, you know, and joggers is what they want to have all the green belt to be, a resource for upper middle class people, but not for poor people.
And look at the camp now.
Right. There is no camp now. There is, of course, an area where there was already a murder, where I don't know if drug dealing has returned or not, but they have stripped the riparian corridor of trees, and that wasn't the homeless people that did it. Sounds like the Parks and Rec or Public Works went down there and did it so that the police could have a clear vantage point and see the entire area and stop campers from returning. Really a slimy deal, and the city council, of course, has sat on its tuckuses and done absolutely nothing on this issue except pass an unworkable Camp Paradise, a plan that supposedly is going to address Camp Paradise's needs, but doesn't at all. It allows you to camp for two weeks in a park with all these incredible restrictions. I talked about that earlier in the show, but so you're going to do an appeal of these cases, but this is awfully late. Why has the court kept these tapes from you? I mean, it was November that this trial was. We are in April, and usually you appeal within a month. What's going on?
They couldn't find a machine that worked.
They couldn't find a machine that worked. You know, somehow, I think that if this were a serious case, they would have found a machine lickety-split.
Yeah.
But, you know, having to do with homeless people and poor people, they couldn't find a machine that worked. I see.
When I asked to speak to the presiding judge, they found a machine that worked.
My goodness. Well, we must commend Many Faces McAdams, as I've sarcastically called him, because, you know, on this occasion, I tip my hat that he finally got this thing going.
Actually, I think we need to commend the judge's secretary more than anyone.
Oh, well, they're the people that do all the work anyway.
Yes, and she said, 4 months? My goodness.
Right.
So she's really the one that got the ball rolling on it.
Well, so what's the status now? Where is this case going to go next, and what should we be looking for?
Well, first we have to file the settled statement on appeal and proposed statement on appeal, and then the city attorney's office will do theirs. Mm-hmm. That's just what evidence is going to be admitted and basically fought over, like a yard sale kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll get down to actually getting down to the law.
Hmm.
And I'm hoping that we can find something besides good old Eichhorn to rely on.
Well, it's such an outrageous decision by Joseph that, you know, I mean, the Eichhorn decision, of course, is the state Supreme Court decision that says if a person is charged with camping, you have to allow that person the use of the necessity defense. And of course, Joseph did. He followed the law.
Right.
But another part of that decision was a strong recommendation kind of embedded in the decision that if a person that sleeping is a human necessity. I mean, we've had the wonderful Mayor Chris Krohn say, sleeping is a human right, and they passed that resolution at City Council, but he can't seem to say sleeping should be a legal right, so it's still illegal, and Krohn refuses to bring anything to the council around that issue. So you are forced to go into court to say, look, it may be illegal, but it's necessary. And because it's necessary, like in Santa Barbara, where people sleeping in their cars, and the judges at the hack level of Irwin Joseph, I think it's Talmadge, Commissioner Talmadge in Santa Barbara, found, oh no, it's not a necessity. The three judges of the appeals court down there unanimously turned that case back and said, it is obviously a necessity. Let them go. Dismiss the charges. Do you think is going to be the result of your appeal? You have a pretty conservative court up there,
yes,
right?
Yes, and to be truthful, I don't think Camp Paradise is a realistic case to take this up on, but of course we have to do it. I mean, simply because of the facts. I mean, we have an established camp with a generator and a kitchen and, you know, et cetera. We basically had a small town built down there, and that was hard, you know, a far cry from someone who slept in a storewell for the night, just seeking shelter, which is what I think Joseph was saying, and a lot of the cases say that the necessity defense is basically to be applied to, but we're going to try to stretch it. We need to stretch it. We need to have a necessity defense stretched.
Well, I think you also have the stats here in Santa Cruz. I actually ran into Police Chief Steve Belcher about half an hour ago en route to this show. He didn't arrest me. We exchanged greetings. But he himself reported 2 years ago that the homeless rate, the rate of beatings of homeless people, the chance of being beaten if you're a homeless person outside, by mostly by non-homeless people, but by some, obviously in some cases, and you know, by other homeless people, is like 4 to 10 times that of folks indoors. So you're obviously at a much higher risk. That's 400 to 1,000% higher. I mean, if you had that those kind of odds, you know, you might not go out on the street at certain occasions. You know?
Yeah, well, we could. I mean, and I think the testimony in court was three to five times greater.
Yeah, that's a more conservative estimate.
Yes, but I think if it, you know, a miracle would be some kind of, if we could stretch the necessity defense to include the fact that homeless people are safer when they band together, that would be.
Oh, I don't think that's a stretch. It seems to me that's a pretty straightforward thing. It's obviously a safe.
Well, I say a stretch simply because of the mindset of the courts.
Right. Well,
you
of
know,
course,
if we could get them to buy that somehow, then
right.
Yes, homeless people should be allowed to band together.
Well,
to sleep.
You know, to me, to some extent, you know, they used to say the courts follow the election returns, and you know, a lot of the free speech decisions of the 20s and 30s nationally came after two centuries of repression. There's a great mythology in this country that somehow sidewalks have always been public and parks since time immemorial have been public forums. They have not. And in fact, throughout this history, there has been repression of speech in the United States. However, when unions began to organize in strong numbers in the 20s, particularly in the 30s, the courts started saying, well, okay, I guess we'll give you guys some free speech because you're getting it anyway. And here, you know, in Portland, Oregon, where Dignity Village got together in Camp Paradise here in Santa Cruz, what happened because people decided to do it, not because they looked for legal sanction or administrative okay. And I think that it seems pretty clear to any reasonable citizen looking on that you're going to be safer in an encampment. Maybe you don't, you know, maybe the question of a generator or the question of a community kitchen might be raised. But these were not specifically pointed to by Commissioner Joseph as the reason that this was considered by him to be an inappropriate use of the necessity defense. And he did not give any alternatives. He did not say,
no.
You could have rushed off and slept off by yourself under in a doorway somewhere. He didn't, you know. He was abusively neglectful of any kind of real response on this issue. Instead, he in essence was saying, gosh, all you politicians downtown, I don't want to offend you, so therefore guilty.
Right. And he did, you know, he did paint the camp as, you know, as this little, this wonderful little town, and say, see, I can't possibly be okaying this type of activity. But you're right, he didn't actually, you know, plug that into any sort of legal theory.
He didn't say what the alternatives were.
No.
There have to be alternatives,
there do have to be alternatives.
You know, if you're not going to be if you're going to obey the law, then what are the alternatives for sleeping where you can obey the law? You know, go to Fresno. You know, swim to Japan. I don't know what your options are, but he certainly didn't specify what they were.
That was the biggest uproar when he read the decision. Was that when he read the part about that there were reasonable alternatives?
If he had even had the courage or the, you know, the basic respect to propose some alternatives, but he was so impoverished in his thinking, and it was such an obvious whitewash that he couldn't even come up with anything specific.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the thing that's bothered me that this case has lain about rotting for 4 months is that there are people outside who died,
yeah.
who might not have died
yeah.
if this necessity defense were clearly and visibly available. I mean, it is still available, and people, I hope, will use it.
Well,
and,
yeah, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
But I want to say that I've put the word, I've spoken to Linda Bradley and Ken Cole.
And the
Homeless Resource yeah. Center, and let them know that I want to, you know, take on anybody pro bono with a camping ticket, particularly, you know, who has a reasonable necessity defense, individuals, because we'd like to get this going
mm-hmm.
and try to find plaintiffs where we can use it on an individual basis while we're also working on the appeal.
Mm-hmm.
so that we can, you know, keep it generating and find, you know, in the more plaintiffs we have.
Is there a number you want people to call? You want them to call the Huff line, 423-HUFF?
They can call the Huff line. They can call my office number, 465-9393.
465-9393. We're talking with Chris Fredrickson, who's a former resident and also an attorney, yes, a real attorney, for Camp Paradise.
Nobody seems to be clear about when the armory is closing, and I haven't been down there.
April 15th is what Chris...
April 15th? I haven't been down to the...
Yeah, Chris Storms, the manager of the armory, says April 15th.
Okay, as soon as that happens, there may be some good plaintiffs, and my feeling is the more we can bring in, you know, we'll get them out of Mulligan's court right away, and the more we can bring in, the more possibility we have of using the necessity defense on individual people and actually getting some wins.
Yeah, I think it's important also to link this to the fact that what we really need is not just trying to defend a scattered number of people, though that's good, and look for wins, but what you want to do is get people to band together in Camp Paradise type encampments,
yes,
and continue to do this even as they get tickets. And the way to do it is, of course, is you need to get community support,
yeah,
and even though you should be able to drink, and you should be able to take drugs, yes, you should be able to do those things that adults do in if they're housed behind closed doors. Unfortunately, if you're homeless, you're in a goldfish bowl, and bigots use this as the basis for coming after you, even if these are, you know, the things that ordinary adults normally do, and they don't involve any necessarily abusive conduct. So, you know, it's a problem because you've got that situation, and even Camp Paradise, where there was marijuana use, some people have medical marijuana cards, who knows, some may not have. It shouldn't have been any big deal at all, but it became, you know, a real question about, you know, is it really clean and sober?
It was rough. A lot of people came down to detox, and a lot of people, you know, would relapse, and we had a lot of problem with that, but it still was a safe place for people to come, you know, to try to stay clean and sober.
What's happening with Camp Paradise now? Have you talked to, I know they've moved out to a private area out near Aptos, behind a church or something?
Yeah, Mount Calvary. I only chatted with Larry briefly Tuesday, and I haven't seen him for a couple weeks, just because I've been real busy.
I'm going to try to call him on the phone, maybe get an update from him, of course.
Yeah, I do know that the Service Corps is very busy, which is good news, really good news.
Now, the Santa Cruz Service Corps is the group that kind of formed around the Camp Paradise to try to...
Out of the camp, I think.
Provide a sort of a work program for people who are looking to get work, and also a supportive program for looking for, you know, ways that people who are homeless can work, and because in order to work you need to sleep somewhere, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And they finally found places to sleep, so that now when we actually have a Service Corps meeting, and those of us like myself who are out of the camp now can actually go and work on the Service Corps instead of spending hours with the frustrating question of where are we gonna sleep, because no business could be gotten to until that question was answered.
But you know, this is only because you have the generosity of a particular church, and you know, it conceivably that could end.
And it could go on. Yes.
And it could go on.
It could go on, and the camp was being moved around, and it was a lot of us spent a lot of hours on the phone trying to move the camp around, and we did all winter. We managed to move. But it was a lot of energy, and it was really hard to do business as usual, you know, or any business at all, business unusual. And hopefully now, you know, that generosity will continue for a little while. But yeah, you're right. I mean, we don't know. We don't know what will happen. Maybe with this homeless summit coming up, we can get Larry's generator recharged, and you know, as a camp leader and.
Or maybe get some new camp leaders as well. I'm not saying we should leave Larry behind at all, but you know you need more than one person. You need a number of people to do this.
Yes, because people in other towns or cities are doing it. Have you spoken to Isla Vista people? What is her name?
Jenny Jett. Yeah, but she's the woman who is a supporter. She lives in a house, but she's sort of a link with the Isla Vista Camp Home Sweet Home down there, which has been, first it was at one park, now it's a teepee park, they call it. And they actually are in a situation where the park district has no law against sleeping or camping, because they thought they could use the county law, but they can't. And there was so much opposition to making a new law at the last meeting they had several weeks ago that they formed a committee to try to find find a way to accommodate, this is really a first, homeless people in parks. Although we've heard a little, you know, scare tactic talk about this in Santa Cruz, there really has been no real proposal to accommodate people in parks in Santa Cruz. You know, there's been a talk about funding New Brighton Beach way back in 1996 when the Coral Street Open Air Shelter was busted up by Kennedy and Rotkin. There's been talk about, you know, this completely unrealistic, unworkable program that, you know, was passed, which might allow Camp Paradise a couple weeks in one of the three parks if the neighbors don't scream too much, which they, I suspect they're going to. But there's been no real proposal for parks except in Isla Vista, where it's really quite impressive.
They're actually working on their own ordinance.
They are working on an ordinance with homeless people on the committee, which is unusual.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's really quite impressive, and I hope to get an update from Jenny Jett. And she's coming up here, of course, along with a bunch of people, some people anyway, from Isla Vista and from Santa Barbara, which was really a center of homeless activism in the 80s. And they Mitch Snyder was down there, Reagan had his summer headquarters, and there were protests, the right to vote for homeless people was sort of assured by blocking the freeway down there. When the homeless people did that, they actually eliminated the sleeping ban in Santa Barbara because of a massive come to Santa Barbara, go to sleep, go to jail at the Fig Tree protest in 1986. It was reinstituted 4 years later when an opportunistic politician did it, but that was not because of any specific abuses that happened. I mean, Santa Barbara is quite a, you know, quite a place. We hope to have these folks up for the homeless summit May 3rd and 4th.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Well, Chris, we're talking to Chris Fredrickson. Anything else you want to add on this?
Not really. I better get back to my computer here.
Hey, thank you for calling in. I'm sorry I turned a private conversation into a public one, but I appreciate your...
I wasn't sure which number I was calling. I just wanted to let you know about the tapes.
Great. That's the Camp Paradise appeal proceeding forward.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM.
Nigga with Disability, NWD is here, there, everywhere. Leroy, revolutionary black disabled poet, can't stand still. Yuppies need to get real. Breaking through white picket fences. Downing Southern Comfort, but NWD is anti-comfortable. So everybody on your feet and welcome Leroy, a.k.a. Nigger with Disability.
I was an African, but then I was a nigger. And then I was a Negro. Then I was a Afro-American. Oh, and then I was a black man. Or so they say, and here it is again, African American. Let's see here. I was an African, strong, bellicose, belligerent, beneficent, benevolent, and decorative. And then nigger, one lazy-ass motherfucker, also ignorant, dumber than a box of rocks on a hot Sunday. And now, Negro. Most of us recently free from chains, but still remain on plantations, now called ghettos. Definition, a place to where a group or a race of people are sent off to die. Okay, now check this out. Next, Afro-American. Afro, a hairstyle. My hairstyle. My natural hairstyle. And then named by a stolen land which I might not have supposed to have been born in. And then, ain't this a bitch? Then I was a black man. Black, 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 black man. Dirty. Evil, with bad intent, untrustworthy. The dictionary reads, indigenous people of Africa. And this still gets me, African American. No longer am I being identified by my hairstyle, but also cannot sport it whether I braid it or have it nicely combed. They say it's not a clean look, you look like a thug, it looks stupid, it looks untrustworthy. And the whites, oops, Caucasians, nobody is pure, haven't called us Africans since 1619. The beginning, our beginning, and this word, America. American? America. Who and what the fuck is America? Vespucci, a man who told stories of a land really called Turtle Island. Never been to the place, just told stories about it. Americans, a group of people responsible for the most heinous crimes in history, a group of people who held the world's record for the two biggest Holocausts in history, and they want to point their finger at Hitler. That motherfucker ain't got shit on George Washington and Abe Lincoln. His decision to free us was strategical, not ethical, so we freed ourselves, but have died and are still dying for nothing more than false freedom. So who are we, really? The rules say if you're born in the land, you're from that land. But I cannot be an American. I have nothing to do with, nor want anything to do with, robbing people of their land and killing them off to enslave another. 50 stars for 50 states. More than 50 tribes, only 5 recognized by the U.S. government. And none for me and mine. And I can't be a nigger, because I built this country. And still it holds up on my shoulders to this day. And Negro just doesn't describe my people. We ain't even talk about Afro-American. And I for damn sure ain't dirty, evil, untrustworthy, or have bad intentions upon anyone. I hate everybody equally and love everyone the same. So I'm not black. An African-American is just half right. The African part, that is. But we cannot just be Africans because we were not born there according to the rules. So I say that we are African descendants, not Africa. A Kubalan, if you really want to get down to it. My African people, you have got to realize that there is one last chain to be broken, and it is in our minds. The Willie Lynch program is still in effect. 5 degrees of separation. If we are fighting each other, then we are not focusing on a threat. Remember, we are still fighting for our freedom. Understand that we are all we got, and we have got to free each other in order to free ourselves. And it will not work alone. When you see each other, show love no matter what. Be glad that they have made it on this long, hard journey. And it ain't over. I dedicate this to my brother Kenny G, born February 26, laid to rest April 30th, year 2000. Always in my heart. Another African warrior lost to this American bullshit. Are you an American?
Indictee Larry Templeton. Hey, Larry, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. Doing good.
You're at the Santa Cruz Service Corps headquarters.
Yes, I am.
And you probably weren't listening to our show.
Well, I just got in. I just got done taking a shower. I was working out in the lawn all day today.
Oh, excuses, Larry.
Oh, no, I'm a busy man.
So I understand, we just talked to Chris Fredrickson on the air, and she told us that your case is now being appealed, along with that of Kay's and I guess it's Randy Sue's.
Yes.
So how's that going? I know that you're legally camped somewhere in the back of a church.
Yes.
But you probably are in touch with a number of people who are not legally camped, right?
Yes, I am. I'm still in touch with them, and we're still trying to give them an opportunity to come and sign up at the Santa Cruz Service Corps here.
Mm-hmm.
If they want to start their own group of 15 in the parks that has been designated as the camping areas, they know they got to have insurance and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
Well, we're willing to go for them to carry the insurance, but they still have to abide by our guidelines.
Uh-huh. And those are what, clean and sober stuff?
Yes, it is.
Now, does that allow for medical marijuana?
Yes, it does.
Okay. What about the occasional beer?
No beers. Oh. Unless they do it out of camp and they come home, if they're intoxicated, they must go straight to their tent.
Well, can they associate with characters like Norse and his vicious protest downtown?
Well, as long as they're downtown, they ain't in camp. That's your business.
Well, I hope they don't bring Norse into camp, man. That could be... So has anybody signed up? How are you doing? And has anybody been interested?
We haven't got no sign-ups yet. We got one group that's trying to get their number a little bit bigger because they only wanted to do it with three, and we couldn't do it with three people.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
How many people is in the group that you've actually gone yourself to Jim Lang of Parks and Rec looking for a permit, right?
Yes.
How's that going?
It's going all right now. It's going all right.
Do you actually have a you know, sort of an anticipated time when you'll be able to use the park?
Well, hopefully we can get another group. I mean, if a group wants to be legally camp and wants to start out like Camp Paradise did, mm-hmm. we're more than willing to help them. If not, we'll do the work ourselves.
Uh-huh.
It don't matter.
Well, so,
you know, because a lot of them, they want to gripe about, mm-hmm. Camp Paradise is getting all the favors. Camp Paradise is getting this, Camp Paradise is getting that. Well, this is their chance.
Well, where is Camp Paradise in the process? I mean, has Lang agreed that you guys can have a place, or is that still up in the air?
It's still open. I mean, the law's passed now that we can do that.
But, I mean, he is the ultimate authority. The law gives him the power to say yes or no.
Yes, exactly. And if you meet all of his guidelines, then it's perfectly fine.
How long have you been? Have you been negotiating with him as Tom Shaver of the Santa Cruz Service Corps?
Tom has.
And how many times have you met with him?
Three times, I think, right now.
And what are the kinds of concerns he's expressed to you?
Mainly that the place is kept clean. He really was impressed with Camp Paradise, or he wouldn't even have took this on himself.
Did he actually come down and look at Camp Paradise?
Yeah, he's been there at Camp Paradise. Yes.
Uh-huh. So what, you met with him three times, and what, that was a couple weeks ago, the first meeting, or?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
So what's the holdup?
Well, we had to wait for the city council to do their thing. Now me and Tom's putting our papers into him to get another site established, and so far I think it's going to be De La Vega.
Huh. And this will be for 2 weeks only?
Yeah.
And would you be actually cleaning up De La Vega Park, or would you be going to other areas to clean up?
We'll be going to other areas there while you're there.
Uh-huh.
And there's a tennis court there, or a golf course,
uh-huh.
that has quite a bit of work there that can be done.
Mm-hmm.
And it ain't hard work. It's just getting rid of some of the unnatural plants here of California.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if they want a free place to live, I don't see nothing wrong with pulling a little bit of weeds.
How many hours a day are they going to expect people to work in order to earn their keep?
I don't think it went by an hour a day. I think it went by so many hours a week.
Uh-huh.
We haven't established all that yet, but it ain't going to be a lot of hours, like a whole day job. It ain't going to be nothing like that.
Because if you're trying to get, you know, out of homelessness, and most of you are still in this
camp,
you need to have some opportunity to actually make some real money,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. And Jim Lang is, we're trying to work on that. We're working together, me, Tom Schaefer, and Jim Lang, trying to come up with ideas how if people put in more hours, they can get compensated for that.
Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing I want to talk to you about is that you become computer literate. I've seen you on the internet. You actually sent me an email. I was shocked. And you seem to be interested in this upcoming homeless summit where Dignity Village and Isla Vista and who knows, maybe Seattle will all get together and try to find some ways of strengthening the various encampments.
Well, yeah, it's the only way that the whole world's going to see that there is a lot more homeless out here than they really think.
Mm-hmm. So you're expecting to come to that summit on May 3rd and 4th?
Yes, I am.
So you were at the city council meeting on Tuesday night 2 days ago. I saw you there chatting with, I guess, Chris and maybe Carl.
Yeah.
You were invited to come speak, but you never made it over to our little group. Now,
well, I've seen you sitting there talking, so I thought
you're trying to respect me and my blathering. Well, did you stay for the council meeting?
No, I didn't stay very long. I had another appointment, so I just...
You missed all the fun when we served the council legal papers.
Yeah, what happened here? What did they say?
Well, I'm actually going to play that on the air. You might want to turn on the radio after this is over, and you
okay.
can actually hear it.
Okay.
Now we get to the nasty part of the thing. You have been attacked in the Santa Cruz Sentinel, or actually the story was described, I guess, is it a former member of your camp who has accused you of extortion?
Yes, it is.
Now, I don't ask you to make any statements on the air unless you want to. Being advised, if you're at the criminal defendant, you know, you are, you know you're liable for what you say.
Only ones that keep their mouth shut is the ones that's guilty for things.
Mm-hmm.
This year, I'm not guilty of.
What are you accused of?
I'm accused of threatening to take money or property from someone.
Mm-hmm.
There was a paint job I did for someone.
Mm-hmm.
And after the job was done, he wasn't willing to pay for it. And after he got the insurance check for the job,
mm-hmm.
He still said that he wasn't going to pay.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, then we would have to repossess the bike, and I left at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't talked to the man since, and now all of a sudden I'm being charged with something. Mm-hmm. I was doing it through small claims.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't called him since our little talk at his house. We never got loud. He got very loud. I never did.
Mm-hmm. This, of course, is one of the original defendants in the court case, Squirrel, right?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I mean, I don't believe what the hell he's doing. You know, when I walked into his house to get mm-hmm. the insurance money, his wife came down here at our Christmas party and said that he had.
Mm-hmm.
I said, fine. He never showed up that night. Like, she stayed here until almost midnight waiting for him. He never showed up. So the very next night, I went up there to Squirrel's house. Mm-hmm. And he was sitting there doing meth. I said, I want my money. He said, I had bills to pay. I said, what about my bills? And he just said, fuck you, get out of my house. I said, dude, why are you even talking to me like that? I said, we were friends, dude. And he kept going. I said, you know what, this ended the friendship.
Hmm.
And I left.
Well, we talk about Camp Paradise now. I know that there have been concerns in the past that, and I've expressed them, that you have such a sort of a sole position of leadership in the camp, and your authority is so sweeping that people feel, on occasion, intimidated, and then they are resentful, and that can happen. And I guess it's been suggested by me and others at different times. It's, first of all, it's more comfortable for you because you don't have to make all the decisions, and second of all, you don't get all the blame, you know.
Yeah.
Have you thought about that as an alternative?
Yes, I have.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I have.
So when are you going to do it there, Larry?
Hey, we have a co-founder, we have Tom Schaefer, we have Paul Lee that all makes decisions for this.
Uh-huh.
And the thing that was just printed in the paper is completely stupid, and I can't wait for people to read the outcome of this.
Now, when is your arraignment?
April 4th.
Hey, that's right after my arraignment on April 3rd.
Oh, yours is April 3rd?
Yeah, I'm going to be arraigned for doing my Heil Krone salute. supposedly disrupting a public meeting. I don't think so.
Yeah.
So this is April 4th. It's probably at around 8:15 or 8:30 in a courtroom.
Yeah, 8:15.
And what are you accused of?
Extortion.
Is that felony or misdemeanor?
That's a felony.
So you were actually taken to jail, and how many days were you held in jail?
I was only there about 4 hours.
And then you were bailed out?
I bonded out.
Now, did you actually lose $500 in that?
Yes, we did.
So nobody wanted to put up a $5,000 bond, I guess?
Well, we were going to, and, I didn't feel like sitting there waiting.
I gotcha.
So I had the extra money, and I got out.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, this, of course, violates my cardinal rule, which is never bail out if you're going to lose money. But, you know, I can appreciate that other people don't necessarily follow.
I had a lot of other things I had to take care of, and...
You needed to get out.
Yeah. Right now, it's what happened. If anybody wants to believe it, that's fine. They can believe whatever the hell they want to.
Mm-hmm. Have you experienced any repercussions from this? Are people less...
No, I've had a lot of people tell me they think this boy is so full of shit, they don't even know what the hell he's trying to pull, because he's told a lot of these people the thing that he ain't saying in the newspaper. So he really fucked up. He told our attorney all the deal about the bicycle,
mm-hmm.
how the insurance paper was being filed. You know what? Squirrel's the one that messed up, not me.
Well, you know, I always hate to see it when people who have been, to some extent, comrades, fall out.
Yeah, exactly.
And I always encourage you to avoid dissing folks if you can. I mean, I diss them. I'll diss the politicians up the yin yang, no question about it, and I'll continue to do it. But I've had similar problems with activists. You and I have, you know, had disagreements as well.
Yeah, we have.
But you know, it's so bad when we begin fighting among each other.
Exactly.
You know, it'd be nice to find another way. And I guess the concern a lot of us have, I mean, there is. I know I talked to Carl Wilson of Friends of Camp Paradise. He was very concerned that you are in fact being harassed by the authorities. Do you feel that's the case?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. You know, when somebody, one thing about this, the law that I don't think they even understand their goddamn selves is when you're made when. Like, if I made a charge against you, Robert, okay, saying you're harassing me,
mm-hmm.
All right, they're supposed to be, they got to have two sides of this story before they can make any charge against anybody. Mm-hmm. I have never been asked by a detective anything of this sort. Mm-hmm. I guess they've had the warrant out for me. Now, this is what's so damn funny. They've had warrant out for me since February.
That's interesting.
You know, and how many times did I see Seeley? How many times were we down at City Hall?
Well, why do you think that suddenly this warrant was called in and enforced?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I mean, I have heard other people charge you with not
worse charges than this.
You know, not extortion, but threats. And, yeah. And you're a person who loses his temper. You can't deny it. You've gotten angry at different
exactly,
times.
Exactly, but I've never threatened or bodily hurt no one.
Well, I don't know if I would care to debate that in a public forum with your liberty at stake. So I will let that one pass. But I think that is, you know, have you agreed to anything like anger management classes? Has that ever been proposed to you?
Nope.
No. Well, I propose it to you. I mean, I will. You know, you need a lot. And it's. I don't want to sound like some, you know, weird radio shrink here. But I think it's important for. And I'm not. These charges are not primarily a matter of concern for me, particularly. Yeah. You know, my concern is though that I have seen you get in disputes with people in the past, and I would like to see a mechanism in the camp set up so that somebody else can come in and mediate. And would that be something you would be open to?
Probably. We got a mediator. It's Tom Schaefer.
Okay, so if people in the camp have a problem with you, they can go to Tom, and Tom can
exactly.
kind of sit down with you guys.
Exactly.
You see, it's sometimes rather it's sort of a little bit daunting to come up to Larry Templeton, who's, you know, the not only are you an outspoken individual, not only are you a person with some prestige, but you know you've got a sharp temper, and I've got to say it, you sometimes say things that perhaps you maybe wish you hadn't at different times. You know, that's just my experience with
sure.
you, and therefore you know it's. Sometimes the person who wants to talk to you can feel kind of, I don't know, you know, and they have to run to the DA instead, if you understand what I mean.
Well, I understand that, too.
And if there's a person like Tom Schaefer who can actually stand there in the middle and, you know, sort of kind of mellow things out, I'm just looking for other alternatives. That's my deal here.
Yeah, okay.
We're talking to Larry Templeton of Camp Paradise. Larry, anything you want to say about the Santa Cruz Service Corps to the public as far as what you're offering, what you're looking for? I know you can be reached at
423-8636.
423-8636. If you have any kind of work, what kind of work are you looking for?
We've been doing all kinds of lawn work, tree work, hauling, moving people.
Mm-hmm.
We have a box trailer now. We have a flatbed trailer. We have our pickup. We have some vans. If people's moving or they need their yard cleaned up or anything, we have a full crew that's ready to go. And we have lawnmowers, we have our weed eaters. We're ready to go. Anybody that needs any work done, we're here.
Hey, 423-863, and April 4th, I probably would like to see folks in court supporting
you. Yes, I would.
Well, I appreciate you coming on the air, Larry, and hey, feel free to get in touch with me later to tell me any little details that you weren't able to discuss on the air.
You bet.
Hey, thanks.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Larry Templeton. I'm Robert Norris. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We have about 50 minutes left in Bathrop's Piers Broadsides here on Free Radio. Call-in number is 427-3772. I was reading a story about half an hour ago about Sacramento and the harassment of homeless people there. And I want to continue reading that story. If I can find the right page.
The lower parkway is being used for people's lives, said Gary Cox, a Presbyterian minister who serves as liaison to the River Campers for Loaves and Fishes, the 12th Street charity that provides services for Sacramento's homeless population. Cox once brought a Christmas tree out to camp. He said he has stayed overnight on the river a half dozen times in an effort to get to know the campers better. Bill McManus, who has camped along the river for 17 years, said he considers the parkway his home. This ranger told me the other day, "You're on my river." McManus said, "I said, I've been here for 17 years. How can it be yours?" McManus, who travels with three German Shepherd mixed dogs and one Husky mix, maintains the parkway is safe despite the large homeless population. "We're no different than any other community," McManus said. "If you look in the paper, you'll see a lot more rapes and murders in the outside community than you do here." Leah Brooks, chairwoman of the Sacramento Area Bicycles Advocates, has a different perspective. She commutes through the parkway every day from downtown to her home in Gold River. "I avoid stopping at least until I get to the H Street Bridge because I always assume that there's somebody hiding in the bushes or living in the bushes," she said. Once a man tried to throw a large stick into the spokes of her bike as she passed. In another incident, Brooks' husband was sprayed with mace or a similar substance by someone standing along the path. "I've had groups of people blocking the bike bridge in the past," Brooks said. "I've had groups of men having parties in the middle of the bridge. I've had people literally passed out." Advocates for the homeless acknowledge the parkway population includes people who are there for reasons other than lack of shelter beds. Some are mentally ill, others want to stay with a boyfriend or girlfriend, or are using drugs or alcohol, and some just don't like being around a big group of people. Jim Gravely, 41, said he's been camping along the parkway for 6 years. He said he doesn't go to homeless shelters. "I don't like to be governed, and you've got to deal with all those other groups," said Gravely, who was playing horseshoes at Loaves and Fishes one afternoon last week. Of course, you have to also consider that homeless shelters are also places where not only is your liberty taken away, but your possessions may be stolen, you may get sick, and you're in a situation with a very, very limited privacy. I add this as an addenda. Several other campers declined to talk. Cox, the Loaves and Fishes liaison, said they are upset and frightened by the February murder of Ken Massey, a popular homeless man who camped under Highway 160. Massey and a companion were shot by a masked gunman as they bedded down. Cox said campers viewed the incident as a sign of rising hostility toward the homeless. But those who advocate clearing the camps from the parkway say the shooting illustrates how dangerous the area is for the campers themselves. "We have this thing the county refers to as a natural jewel. It's a cesspool. It's unsafe," complained Bob Slobe, a North Sacramento businessman whose family sold the North Sacramento Parkway land to the county in the mid-1980s for about $2 million. Slobe has made it a crusade to get the county to crack down. He views the current effort as inadequate. Almost every day, Slobe heads out from his office on Slobe Avenue in North Sacramento. Near Costco and the Radisson Hotel, and hikes or runs along the parkway. He carries a digital camera to document the camps and barrages officials with images from his website. On a recent hike, he found a few active camps and numerous old campsites littered with piles of bicycle parts, sleeping bags, clothes, and garbage. In one spot, a red loose-leaf binder lay in the middle of the path. Inside were neatly clipped male pornography pictures enclosed in plastic sleeves. Slobe argues that it's unfair for the county to tolerate massive illegal camping in the portion of the parkway that abuts one of the city's poorest neighborhoods. "There should be programmed activities down there every single day of the year," he said. "There should be day camps for kids. There should be interpretive services and signage." Without a hint of facetiousness, he offers to donate tents and chemical toilets for homeless camps to be set up in East Portal Park, Curtis Park, Land Park, all in more affluent neighborhoods. Nobody has taken him up on the offer. Sacramento is certainly not the only city that has a homeless camping problem. San Francisco has struggled with illegal camping in Golden Gate Park. Some Santa Cruz councilmen recently caused a stir when they proposed allowing homeless people to get permits to camp in city parks as long as they helped clean them. That, of course, does not really accurately reflect Santa Cruz, but what else is new? Sacramento is unusual in that it has a long strip of relatively wild parkland running the length of the metropolitan area. "We do have a beautiful parkway that has lots of forested areas where people can be protected from the weather," said Jan Galloway, homeless program manager of the Sacramento County Department of Human Assistance. "It really draws people here." The 460-acre portion of the parkway next to North Sacramento, an area larger than Discovery Park, Ansel Hoffman Park, or Goethe Park, is designated in the 1985 Parkway area as a nature area. Only limited recreation, such as hiking or horseback riding, is allowed, but there is no nature center here. There are no signs directing hikers where to go. Slobe said an overturned chemical toilet once was allowed to lie in the middle of the bike path for 4 months. Well, maybe you could have picked it up, Mr. Slobe. Most of the investment the county has made in the parkway has been made outside the city of Sacramento, said Sacramento Mayor Heather Fargo. Fargo said the city might be willing to get in there and offer some facilities if it could work out a lease agreement with the county, a skateboard park maybe, or disc golf, or even a scenic drive along the river. The county is working on an update of the parkway plan, but is unlikely to allow large-scale active recreation in North Sacramento's portion of the parkway. I would hate to put green grass sprinklers in there, said Ron Suter, director of the county parks department. That area is designated for the deer and the critters. So the deer, the critters, and the upper middle class are the folks who are okay in these areas, but the homeless are not. Thank you very much. Littick said the department is trying to come up with ideas, but that critics have to be patient. His department, hamstrung by a lack of funding, is struggling to just pick up the garbage. We're not exaggerating when we say we've taken 28 tons of trash out of there since July, Littick said. Oh, they could always call Camp Paradise in, perhaps. Or maybe work on a Camp Paradise-type solution up in Sacramento. We're trying to make improvements down there. We've added staff. This isn't a problem that's going to be fixed in one day, one week, or one month. Notice throughout this article, it's not a housing problem. It's not a survival problem. It's a, why can't we have more running parks, disc golf, and touristish-type natural services for those with money? A Sacramento homeless activist writes in response to this, "It's a shame the extension of shelter at Cal Expo is not approved by the Board of Supervisors. Yes, the warmer weather will lessen the dangers of sleeping outside, but it is against the law to sleep outdoors. That increases dangers almost as dire as the cold. Homeless people are unable to congregate with others to ensure an aura of safety and community, presenting opportunity for conscientious campers to influence unconscientiousness. They are unable to keep their few possessions from confiscation by police. They must regularly go to court, jail, look for another location to sleep, hoping to sleep undisturbed by police sweeps, and are fined for money they may be saving for rent. They are burdened by not being able to loiter near the place they will sleep, making it impossible to spend any daylight time picking up trash. Many homeless people would love to help our community by cleaning up the parkway, and many do, not mentioned in the article. A real serious danger is that people are denied shelter and also are not allowed to sleep without shelter. What are they expected to do? Where are they expected to go? Jail?" That's Paula Lamazzi, Sacramento, from the SHOC, Sacramento Homelessness Organizing Committee. And all that's about a story in the Sacramento Bee. And in Las Vegas, things are popping. Here's a story, March 26th. The day after the city and Metro Police cleared out 175 members of homeless camp downtown, Las Vegas Mayor Oscar Goodman said Monday he hoped the ongoing pressure on the homeless population would either compel them to seek services or drive them out of the city. Either they're going to finally ask for help or they're going to get so frustrated they'll leave, Goodman said of the homeless. I'd prefer they ask for help. He added that the cleanup was in the best interest of residents because the camps in recent months had created health hazards around Fourmaster Lane and Main Street. But homeless advocates and officials who serve on a regional task force on homelessness said the operation, which cost nearly $11,000, merely served to underscore how far the Las Vegas Valley was from solving the homeless problem. Brother David Boer, a Franciscan friar who provides food and other services to the homeless at the Poverello House, said the cost of the operation could have paid for 3 weeks of shelter at a section of the Salvation Army shelter that closed last September for lack of funds. The loss of beds and shelters around the city during the past year and metro sweeps at other areas together led to the swell of the homeless camp downtown, he said. It's too bad that taxpayer money had to be used for this when much of the problem could have been avoided if there was adequate shelter, he said. Others predicted that the new homeless sweeps that had risen homeless camps that had risen only blocks away from the one that was dispersed on A Street between Washington and Owens Avenues in Las Vegas and under a bridge on Owens west of the Salvation Army. How can the mayor keep saying there's enough beds and the problem is that we don't want them if all these people are sleeping right next to a shelter which they couldn't get into, said Anthony Richards, one of about 60 men and women camped under the bridge Monday. Goodman is asking Metro and city marshals to maintain a presence in the area to, quote, help the homeless. The mayor has insisted there are enough beds, though officials from MASH Village, the Las Vegas Rescue Mission, and the Salvation Army all said Monday their shelters have been full every night. We put our names on the list to get into the MASH tent, but in the end there was no space. Joshua and Rebecca, a couple who declined to give their last names, said Monday they spent Sunday night under the bridge at Owens Avenue west of the Salvation Army. Brenda Dizon, who heads the Shade Tree Shelter for Homeless Women and Children, said the shelter had 33 empty beds Sunday night, but she said she has run into only a handful of women from the sweep with 10 new women entering the shelter Sunday. Another couple, Bernardo Segura and Dolores Barron, said they did not even seek a shelter bed because local shelters do not allow unmarried couples to stay together. If anybody wants a bed and is willing to abide by the rules, I'll make sure they have a bed if that means going into my own pocket to get them a motel room, Goodman said Monday. That's the mayor. Gary Peck, executive director of the Nevada American Civil Liberties Union, said city officials are lying when they say there is adequate shelter. Peck said homeless people wanting shelter are being turned away. The reason that city officials keep repeating the big lie that there is ample shelter space is because they understand that absent that shelter space or some other designated reasonable location where within the city where these people can go, the homeless have a right to be out there, he said. Tensions are mounting between law enforcement agencies and the ACLU, which says officers are violating the civil rights of the homeless. And we will be inviting the ACLU from Las Vegas to come to the summit May 3rd and 4th. The ACLU has argued that as long as there is not adequate shelter, homeless people cannot be arrested while engaged in life-sustaining activities such as sleeping or eating. Only two homeless people were arrested during Sunday's sweeps. A couple were arrested early in the day near Washington Avenue and Veterans Drive on domestic violence charges after getting into a fight on the street. Alan Lichtenstein, legal counsel to the ACLU, said a metro officer told him Monday that anyone sleeping on the sidewalk in a group of more than three people would be arrested. Lichtenstein said this is clearly unconstitutional. The matter is likely headed to court, he said. This is an effort to disperse the homeless and drive them out, Peck said. The rising tension in the area is not going unnoticed by those who run the shelters. What happens in the next week or so is critical, Ruth Bruland, executive director of MASH Village, said. If the community slides into thinking, oh, we took care of those guys, it's not true. We didn't take care of those guys, she said. We took care of a situation, she said, but we need to change the way we're doing things. Those changes may be months off. The Southern Nevada Regional Planning Coalition is scheduled in April to discuss a five-point plan. Its homelessness task force is devised for addressing the issue. The plan must then be approved by the cities of Henderson, North Las Vegas, and Las Vegas, as well as Clark County. North Las Vegas Councilwoman Stephanie Smith, a task force member, said recent events only serve to show how much a regional approach to solving the problem is needed. At least 5 years ago, I felt as if we were losing track of the bigger picture and pouring millions into building shelters in downtown Las Vegas without having asked fundamental questions like, do we know how many homeless there are? Do we know exactly what their needs are? Do we want all the shelters to be grouped in one place? Now the time has come to spend millions more on asking and surveys and consultants for these studies. Actually, she didn't quite say that. She said, now the time has come to answer those questions. It's all so much fun to do the surveys while people are being harassed and rounded up by the police. That's from the Las Vegas Sun of March 26th. And a little bit closer to home, although a bit of ways away, in Union City, on Tuesday night, while our city council was being sued, and we're going to be hearing that shortly, a little clip from that, Union City moved to clarify the sleeping ban. Council says limit on spending night in vehicles is not to punish the homeless. This is a Mercury News story. Union City council members say a new law that prohibits sleeping in cars, vans, and campers is not intended to punish the homeless or push them out of town. Certainly not. The ordinance, which will take effect in 30 days, bans people from living, sleeping, or eating in their cars for more than two consecutive hours on public and private property. Boy, they're bucking for the meanest city award. The law also makes it difficult to cook in a car or motorhome. After homeless advocates expressed concern that the ordinance targets the homeless, council members Carol Dutra Vernacci and Richard Val ask that the council delay its decision to give city staff members time to amend the law. While a majority of council members gave final approval to the ordinance Tuesday night, they asked the city staff to bring back an addendum that clarifies the law's intent. The law was designed to crack down on people who live in cars and recreational vehicles in the city's industrial district, where business owners and residents, called this the Emily Riley Law, have complained about the trash that car dwellers have left behind and about the swirl of illegal activity, such as drug use and prostitution, that has enveloped some of the encampments. City officials say the primary impetus for the ordinance is campers who have homes elsewhere but sleep in their cars to be close to their jobs on weekdays. This is the biggest... Well, let me continue. But Dutra Vernacci said the ordinance is written in such general terms that it would give the impression that the city is out to harass homeless people. I want to be sympathetic about homelessness and not project the image that we don't care. I'll bet you don't, Dutra Vernacci said. I mean, I'll bet she wants to project that image. Folks are not happy that we're trying to push homelessness off of our streets. People caught living in their cars on a regular basis and creating a nuisance could be cited and fined up to $100. Repeat offenders could face misdemeanor charges. Interim City Attorney Michael Reback is working with Police Chief Randy Ulibarri to change the law to reflect the city's goal. We want to come back with some language that clearly expresses the council's intent that this is not directed at a societal homeless issue, Reback said. But officials acknowledge that the homeless still could be cited on a case-by-case basis if they camped out in the industrial areas. Councilmember Ben Elias said car campers have soiled the city's image. The intentions are good intentions of keeping the city clean, Elias said. We want our city to continue to get rid of blighted areas and graffiti. The police department plans to direct families caught living in their cars to homeless shelters in Fremont or Hayward rather than immediately cite them, city officials said. Which is, by the way, illegal under the ICORN decision. You can't send them to cities elsewhere in other jurisdictions. However, shelters are often full with long waiting lists. About 90 people are on a waiting list to get a shelter bed at Fremont's Sunrise Village on any given day, said Louis Chicoine, executive director of the Tri-Cities Homeless Coalition. Dutra Vernacci and Chicoine plan to meet in the next few weeks to discuss other alternatives for Union City homeless. The ordinance also applies to travelers who park overnight at the Walmart parking lot in Union Landing Shopping Center. However, temporary campers could get a $5 parking permit that would allow them to stay for a limited time. This is a Mercury News story from today's Mercury News. And obviously, it's an anti-homeless law that they don't want to acknowledge as anti-homeless because that makes them legally liable and also is a bad image kind of thing. So they're claiming all these pretexts that ignore the reality that they are criminalizing the only shelter that some homeless people lucky enough to have cars have up in Union City. What we're going to do now, and we're kind of running short of time, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, by the way, and that's at 96.3 FM. We're going to play a little bit from the City Council of Tuesday, and very briefly, here's what happened at City Council on Tuesday, at least from my vantage point. In the afternoon, I had written Mayor Crone a letter saying that I wished to be able to speak on a number of consent agenda items. These are items you pull off the consent agenda. Normally, they pass them all at once in a big block, but if you pull them off, the items are discussed separately and voted on separately by the council. Customarily, an item is pulled off either by a council member or a member of the public, and then that individuals are given 3 minutes to speak on that item. Occasionally, it's less, 2 minutes, but usually it's 3 minutes. In the past, I have been differentially treated here so that I was told by Mayor Fitzmaurice I could only speak for 2 minutes on the items I pulled off. Then I was told that the next councilman could only speak for 1 minute on each of the items. And finally, he cut me down to 30 seconds per item. Crone, who we had hoped would be a more tolerant mayor, who would not engage in these kinds of selective violations of the public's right to have input into the city council's business, and it's particularly around homeless issues. You see, they don't want to hear about homeless issues, and that's what this is really about. And they certainly don't want to hear me on homeless issues. And they don't want to be embarrassed for realizing that for the public's realizing they're not doing anything on homeless issues. They're refusing to address long-standing problems like the sleeping ban that criminalizes sleeping outside in Santa Cruz from 11 to 8:30 in the morning and essentially makes 90% of the population into criminals every night. And more important, people who have to go to unsafe places to sleep and can't sleep in groups and can't set up tents against the elements and have no legal place to go. So the consent agenda on May 26th, 2 days ago, I'd written Mayor Crone a letter which essentially asked him, said, look, I really don't want to bother to come to city council meeting unless you're going to guarantee 3 minutes for items on the consent agenda, and then there's another request for items at the end of the public hearing, the second reading of the so-called camping ban corrections, which I'll talk about in a moment. Crone left me a message on the phone, sure, you'll have 3 minutes, that's fine, no problem. When I got to city council, I was told I would have a 5 minute total for 4 items, and I would be forced to talk about all those items together. So I'd have 1 minute and 15 seconds per item. I would be put into a special ghetto situation where I was treated unlike other people who would talk on items separately and individually, and where those items could be discussed by the council or other members of the public who wanted to join in. No, I was to talk on all 4 items at once in a rushed fashion all together, and in such a way as actually prejudiced me in front of the public and in front of the council, because it made it look like I was such a difficult individual that there had to be special rules made up to deal with me. Now, this is unconstitutional. It abridges freedom of speech. It abridges the Brown Act, the right to be present at public meetings and get fair time to speak. And hopefully it's going to be a part of this lawsuit, which actually was what the main thing on the agenda for me. It wasn't on the council agenda, but it was on, I think, the agenda of all the rest of us at the evening session. At the evening session, we had a little press conference where the two attorneys who were filing this lawsuit, Kate Wells and David Beauvais, announced the lawsuit had been filed in federal court. And what you're going to hear now is James Ney serving the lawsuit. And the lawsuit, in essence, is a 7-page document which describes civil rights violations by the council, and it particularly refers to my making the silent Heil Krone salute when Krone cut off Susan Zeman from oral communications on March 12th. And we've talked about it on the air. If you want more information, actually want to see this, you can see it on the web, on the internet. And the website to go to, grab a pencil, is pretty easy to remember, but grab a pencil and here's how you go. You go to www.santacruz, small letters, one word, Santa Cruz, dot indymedia, I-N-D-Y-M-E-D-I-A, indymedia.org. And you'll be able to see the whole Krone salute. And you'll also be able to see the actual visual side of the tape I'm about to play for you, which is activist James Ney serving the city council with papers, interrupted by council member Sugar, who keeps trying to stop him from doing that, and then interrupted by Mayor Krone, who tries to have it, demands he leave the chambers. He refuses repeatedly to leave, and the council backs down. Of course they're backing down. They're being called on their unconstitutional behavior, and they're being hauled into federal court. Anyway, here is the lawsuit being served at city council.
Mayor, City Council, I came here, I had a speech written over your decorum and your efforts to stifle speech through certain members of your audience that you choose that you don't like, or because you don't like their style of speech. But instead I get a much, much more pleasurable duty tonight. My duty tonight begins with you, Mr. Sugar. Mr. Sugar, you are served in federal court. Jim Fitzmaurice, you are served in federal court. Miss Emily Riley, you are served in federal court. Mayor Christopher Krone, you are served in federal court. Mr. Ted Warner, you are served in federal court. You are served in federal court. Thank you all very much for your time, and I will give the rest of my time to the rest of the people.
There, of course, is that it would be nice if you council members were courteous enough to live up to your own rules and not interrupt people when they're speaking. And Krone then orders him to leave the room, and you'll hear that. You also hear voices from the back shouting, "You leave." And that was the voice of Scott Graham, an activist who was suggesting the council. It's time for the council to leave the room and possibly the scene.
Could you please leave?
Why? Why did he leave?
Right.
Why?
You leave.
You interrupted
him. You leave.
I didn't interrupt you. You interrupted
him. There was a point of order by a council member. We didn't take any time away from you speaking.
What's the point of order?
Could you please leave the chambers, Mr. Sugar?
The point of order was simply to welcome me. It's an opportunity to address items not on the agenda and not to a legal process or make other statements.
Thank you. You've been warned twice. Next speaker.
So Mayor Sugar was again attempting one of his peculiar free speech restrictions, and Krone immediately backed him up by, without even asking for a vote of the city council, by saying simply, directing the member of the public to leave. So apparently in Krone's eyes, because I experienced the same thing 2 weeks ago when I was directed to leave for, again, silently giving a brief Sieg Heil salute, by Fitzmaurice, the council is always right and the public is always wrong. It's really the wrong approach taken. It's particularly humorous because here the public is realizing it doesn't have to leave. It should stand up and stay. It should sit down and be a part of the whole process there and ignore the unconstitutional and illegal demands of Mayor Crone and his cronies. It's just, you know, that he can make all the protestations he wants. He has free speech. Let him order 100 people to leave. That's fine. But let's get on with the business of the meeting.
Speaker is not on. Please turn on the mic.
Thank you. www.indymedia.org.
Start again.
For those of you at home interested to see a video clip of the incident in question, please look up www.santacruz.indymedia.org to make a decision for yourself, render your own opinion. My name is Greg Uba. I've expressed concern with the meanness of the city previously in an open letter distributed at City Council. I've read about the mean streets both in Santa Cruz and in the LA Times. I've witnessed it firsthand, however, I do not feel that my personal opinions have been given much weight. Therefore, I did a little research. And in comparison, the Santa Cruz and five area counties surrounding Santa Cruz, and that's information going around from the U.S. Census Bureau site, had the following information. And these are percentage statistics and not numerical statistics. Santa Cruz County, last of six counties in black or African persons. Next to last in six counties in Asian persons. Last in mixed race persons. Fourth of sixth in household median income. Next to the most persons living below poverty. Next to the most children living below poverty, with over 21% of Santa Cruz children, county children living below the level of poverty. Last of the six counties in minority-owned firms, and last in the six counties in women-owned firms. In the comparison of UC Santa Cruz and UC Riverside, two campuses whose undergraduate enrollments are within 10% of each other, UC Santa Cruz has one-third the number of Asian students. UC Santa Cruz has 13.4% Latino Chicano compared to 21.7% at UCR. And UC Riverside has 2.5 times as many African or black identified students. Call it what you will. Call it white privilege or the wrongful assumption that the dominant culture is value neutral. But a child poverty rate, which is 1 in 5 children, can hardly be considered any.
Thank you, sir. Next speaker.
When I begin, please.
This is Becky Johnson beginning her speech. She was her time was cut short to 1.5 minutes, and it was also interrupted. She was trying to video most of this, and it is thanks to her video work that we have on the website santacruz.indymedia.org, www.santacruz.indymedia.org, a visual record of what happened there. The actual minutes of my arrest of 2 weeks before at City Council was excised from the record. That's something I failed to mention. One of the four items that Crone forced me to rush through with only a 5-minute period to speak about them was a correction of the minutes, and I tried to add to the fact that the council had essentially ordered me arrested, which has provoked this lawsuit, which is going to take all of them into federal court. It has taken all of them into federal court. And by the way, the next thing we're waiting for is them to file a response, and I'll be talking about that response, and then we'll be, of course, filing the documentation that this one arrest of me is only one of a whole series of incidents where they've cut people off, cut back time, excluded people from the chambers, denied people the right to respond when they were mentioned by name, excluded people from oral communications discriminatively and selectively, and so forth. Anyway, here's Becky Johnson speaking on March 26th at the City Council.
Go ahead, please.
I'm 15 minutes past. Can you restart the clock, please?
Go ahead, please.
Has not been started.
In December of 1999, a small group of homeless advocates began lobbying a campaign to end the sleeping ban. We urge this council and then Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice to put the sleeping ban on the agenda for discussion and ultimately for repeal. We call their effort the City Hall Coffee Clutch and Tag Team Teach-In. Our effort was to provide a lawful yet steady pressure on the council to end this law that makes it illegal for homeless people to sleep at night or to cover themselves with blankets. For up to 4 hours each business day, we went to Tim Fitzmaurice's office and attempted to meet with him to discuss placing the sleeping ban on the city council agenda. On December 21st, we learned that 41 homeless people had died on the streets in the previous year. What did the council do? On December 26th, they served myself and two others with a restraining order, preventing us from attending council meetings. It's estimated the city spent $12,000 pursuing us with this nuisance suit, which ended up being thrown out of court in June by Judge Stevens for lacking merit. This illustrates the lengths this council will go to silence homeless advocates. This pattern and practice must end. Restore the proper position of the public involvement in city business conducted at these meetings. The public input is nothing to be endured. You've shown disgraceful partisanship, depending on whether the speaker was talking about homeless issues or perhaps an issue you feel less guilty about.
Thank you very much. Next speaker.
Good evening, Council Mayor. My name is Linda Lee Master, and I'm going to read you a message from an attorney. Based on the facts you supply, this is written to a friend of mine, in the attached newspaper story, the council members participating in these actions taken against Silver and Norse and the incidents described, as well as the peace officers involved, have opened themselves up to personal non-immune damages liability, independent of the liability of the city, and unless the officer's behavior is repudiated by corrective training, the sheriff's department as well. In a civil action brought under the Federal Civil Rights Act, the officer's only protection, it would seem to me, is if they did not see the disruption but were told about it and, under the circumstances, had no basis for doubting what they were told. I don't know where the city attorney has been in these episodes, but I'm astounded that this is permitted, if only because of the serious legal exposure. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And that was Linda LeMaster, former chair of the Homeless Issues Task Force, reading a letter from Terry Frank of the First Amendment Coalition. I think I have the name right, maybe not. And a bit more from the oral communications of March 26th.
My name is Thomas Levitt. I'm a former member of the city's Homeless Issues Task Force, appointed by the mayor himself, and chair of the city's Living Wage Committee. Tonight, the civil rights of over 2,000 homeless citizens are being violated because the city council has refused to implement the recommendations of the task force I served on. Speaking out on this issue has historically led to homeless advocates being silenced, evicted, and arrested. I may also be arrested. This is not because I enjoy sitting in jail. It is simply because I believe in freedom of speech and civil rights for homeless people. Last meeting, a homeless citizen and advocate of the city was evicted from this meeting and arrested for engaging in a nonviolent, non-disruptive statement of dissent.
At this point, Thomas Levitt raised his hand in a Nazi salute to the city council, doing exactly what I did last week, or 2 weeks before. The council did nothing.
Repeat this act. It is radical dissent that the Constitution and the Bill of Rights was designed to protect. And it is radical dissent on the issue of homelessness, very specifically against which the City Council has engaged in a pattern of illegally using police force to suppress in violation of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Mayor Christopher Cron, Tim Fitzmaurice, Ed Porter, Keith Sugar, and Emily Riley have all spoken against this sleeping ban prior to being actually elected. And yet this violation of the core human right of sleep continues to be violated. Ken Fitzmaurice said the dignity of the council was offended by a simple gesture. Well, I think the council has no dignity as long as people do not have a safe and legal
place to sleep. Which is more offensive? This...
And here he raises his hand in a Nazi salute, and he goes through a series of other gestures, such as he gives the finger, he also puts up a clenched fist. The council does nothing.
Michael Blanton being beaten to death on the riverbank of the San Lorenzo River. This, or Boxcar Billy dying in a carport of hypothermia. This, or Ray Stitch dying, drowning in the river. These were all homeless people. Thank you very much.
Kate Wells. I was on the school board in SoCal for 14 years, and during that tenure, I was chair of the board five times. And during that time, I was variously referred to as a Nazi and a communist, personally referred to. I mean, did I like it? Of course not. Criticism publicly directed at an individual or a body, such as yourselves, is embarrassing and makes one uncomfortable. No matter how much one feels that it's undeserved. However, unlike you, not once in that 14 years did I ever curtail a public speaker during that time, no matter how much it hurt, because I recognized the higher good of a free exchange of ideas. I recognized my role as a public servant. The person responsible for shaping this philosophy in me and my hero in life is a Jewish gentleman by the name of Francis Heisler, who I had the benefit of having as a constitutional law professor. And in his earlier life, he happened to be head of the ACLU when the Nazis were denied a permit to march in Skokie, Illinois. So they, of course, came to him as head of the ACLU. And this man made the difficult decision not only to represent this group, but to win the case. He took it to heart. He's dead now, and unfortunately, he's not resting in peace, looking down at this body who puts themselves above the people that they serve. Were you surprised that Santa Cruz was named the meanest, one of the meanest cities in the state? Maybe if you had been listening to the people who are talking to you, the measure of your worth as a governing body is not how well you listen and take note of a person who faces you, but how well you listen and consider the ideas of those who are critical of you.
And that was oral communications at the Santa Cruz City Council meeting of two nights ago, where the City Council was served with legal papers in federal court for violations of basic First Amendment rights of homeless activists like myself at City Council in an attempt to get the courts to force the City Council to open up its process to restore the rights of free speech at City Council, the right of people to have the appropriate amount of time to speak, the right of people not to be ejected or be fear of being ejected from council meetings, to be right of them not to be interrupted, a whole series of concerns. And I really want to take my hat off to Kate Wells and David Bovee, the attorneys who stepped forward to do this on their own funds, I might add. And thank you very much. They apparently felt it was an issue that was sufficiently pressing. Now we needed someone, and I guess it's going to cost 10 times as much to go after the rights of homeless people outside. But if we can get this one down, maybe the council will start to have to respond to these deals as people come to City Council, as we come to the summit on May 3rd and 4th, that people start setting up camp paradises and encampments and banding together and using the necessity defense. That's what we need to realize. It's not going to be through the councils doing something. It's going to be through the community doing something. Now, earlier today, I took about a half an hour's worth of tape down at Yuppie Planter, including an acrimonious discussion with Sushi Now owner Matisse Selman, as well as Ali Ka calling the police on a man for sitting on the public planter inside the privatized zone when there was nobody else in the entire area, when he'd actually purchased something from New Leaf, where he felt he was a friend of one of the owners and so he could do it, but this other owner didn't want him there. And it's a very interesting discussion. And I tried to give equal time to bunches of people involved, but now I find I have no time to play any of that. And I was accused of being a liar and eliminating things from my radio show in order to censor people. I don't do that, and so I'm not going to play any of it today. But when I return on Sunday at the 3.5 hour show, because this show, Bathrop's Piers Broadsides, which you're listening to, does return on Sunday at 10 o'clock in the morning and goes until 1:30, I will play the entire episode without any kind of censorship. And I'll even try to do it without commentary, though that may be more difficult. And I would tell Matisse Selman, if he's listening, Ali Ka, the owners of the two cafes that have privatized and made Hippie Planter Yuppie Planter, and actually made it a sort of a foreboding forbidden zone where there are very few people that I've seen when I've gone down there. Of course, it was not that pleasant a day today, so perhaps today is not a good example. I tell those gentlemen, I also tell folks who are listening in who wanted to hear this, that it's going to be played on Sunday. And I even set a time. It'll be played at 11 o'clock, from 11 probably to about 11:30. So that's a time certain. I will play that section, 11 o'clock on Sunday. That'll be coming up, I guess, the 31st, I guess it is. Sunday, March 31st, at 11 o'clock in the morning. That entire segment, and it's quite an interesting segment. It kind of runs over some of the older arguments, but it got very heated. At one point, Matisse Selman actually took the tape recorder out of my hand, refused to give it back to me, told me to call the police. I said, let's not do that, and eventually he thought better of his action, gave me back the tape recorder, and though we disagree and are quite angry with each other for what has happened, I think, nonetheless, the dialogue, such as it is, continues. My point of view at that planter has always been these business owners need to get together, not just with the kids, but with the community, and sit down and work out some guidelines and try them out, and not simply wall off half the sidewalk and turn it into their private backyard. That's just not the way to go, particularly when the obvious purpose is to target a particular class of people. And they've refused to do this, hence I continue to urge people not only to boycott Sushi and Alibaba's Cafe and New Leaf Market, but also to tell them on every possible occasion, have you decided to put this matter up for mediation yet? And if you haven't, I'm still not going to buy one bit of sushi from you, or one falafel, or, you know, whatever they sell at New Leaf Market that folks find so appetizing. Actually, I used to be quite a patron of at least two of the three stores. So, we're nearing the end of Bathurst Piers Broadsides. We've got about 8 minutes to go here, and before the infamous Uncle Dennis arrives with the cream, from the cream to the dregs, a nice change of pace from my endless blather on the air. I'm sure it'll be an opportunity to take a breather.
Thankfully, it's not endless.
And we get a little commentary as well as music, I'm afraid, but I guess that goes with the territory. But a couple more things before we leave. I was able finally, after 2 weeks, to get Christopher Crone's emails. Normally, the city council, anything that city council members send out to the public is required to be open to the public and public inspection. But for some reason, they didn't have this available for the last 2 weeks. They finally had it available the day after we served the lawsuit. And what I have here are a series of emails from Crone in response to concerns. For example, David Silva writes to Mayor Crone, Chris, Your Honor, the Santa Cruz City Council needs to stop harassment of activists by arresting, threatening, and expelling them by using spurious decorum concerns to avoid real issues such as the right to sleep at night. To which Crone sends out this generic email, which went out to all the other people who asked similar questions. Thank you for your email. I have attached the rules for conducting city council meetings in regards to oral communications. While it is quite upsetting to have to ask anybody to leave council chambers, if someone is disrupting the meeting and council members request that the mayor ask someone to leave, it is part of council policy to follow up on that request. This is necessary because we have city business to conduct and we have other agenda items to cover. Mr. Norris was asked to leave 3 times to leave the council chambers for giving a Nazi salute. He was given the choice of to either leave or face arrest. He chose to be arrested. I hope this email answers your concerns and clarifies the process involved. And he also includes the decorum rules, which include the following statements. While the council is in session, all persons shall preserve order and decorum. Any person making personal, impertinent, or slanderous remarks or becoming boisterous shall be barred by the presiding officer from further attendance at said meeting, unless permission for continued attendance is granted by a majority vote of the council. It also says, under the instructions of the presiding officer shall be the duty of the sergeant at arms or any police officer present to eject from city council chambers any person in the audience who uses boisterous or profane language or language tending to bring the council or any council member into contempt, or any person who interrupts and refuses to keep quiet or take a seat in order to do so by the presiding officer or otherwise disrupts the proceedings of the council. These are clearly, of course, unconstitutional rules because they go to the content of speech. They don't go to the idea that, yeah, you surely have the right to have a non-disrupted meeting, but you don't have the right to restrict the content of the speech that comes before you. And that's why these rules are being taken to court to be struck down in this federal lawsuit, and why we're seeking damages, because these council members should have known these rules are unconstitutional. It's been brought to their attention repeatedly before. Again, if you want to see what actually happened at City Council, you can go to the website of Indy Media, and that's at www.santacruz.indymedia.org, and you can get some videotapes that were actually made of this, of the incident where I was arrested and thrown out. Again, an incident that was covered up by City Council. It does not appear in their minutes. The incident was struck from the minutes of City Council 2 days ago when they corrected their minutes and removed any mention of it, other than the fact that I was asked to leave. Apparently, I may be asked to leave in a moment as well by Uncle Dennis, but that will be on live on the air, so we can do something about that, can't we, folks? Well, we'll see about that. Anyway, if you want to join me again, I will be back on Sunday, and between times I can be reached at 423-HUFF. HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Huff also meets every Wednesday if you want to join us at 8:30 in the morning at Baker Square, 1107 Ocean Street. And we're putting together the Homeless Activist Summit, which looks like it's going to be pretty interesting. Plus, a quick news flash for you. You may remember I was arrested about a month or two ago for tabling on the sidewalk in front of New Leaf Market. Again, Matisse Selman issued a citizen's complaint, and Butchie Baker eagerly enforced it by taking me off to the police station in handcuffs, and the charge was blocking the sidewalk. It's a bogus charge. If we have an attorney, and we may have, it may be taken into a civil lawsuit. The charges were, of course, dropped.